When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Are you troubled by stale podcasts in the middle of the night?
Do you love films that feature the busting of spooks, specters, or ghosts?
If the answer is yes, then don't wait another minute.
Ghostbusters Resurrection is an RPG audio drama combining tabletop gaming and cinematic paranormal elimination adventures.
Call the professionals at nerdyshow.com/ghostbusters.
We're ready to believe you.
The following program is presented by the Nerdy Show Network, geeky programming for all nerds across the multiverse. It contains content that may not be suitable for all ages, so listener discretion is advised. All Nerdy Show podcasts are made possible by the generous support of listeners like you. Discover the many ways you can join in at nerdyshow.com. Design episode 26. We've been doing this for over a year.
Yeah.
Nothing to show for it.
And my bandmates still don't know that Thursdays are a no-go. Every time it's brought up, they're like, can you practice Thursday? And you're like, it's been a year, like a year of this. You know I can't.
Yeah, we record on Thursdays, yes. So the listeners, peek behind the curtain. We've shattered the fourth wall. You'll never be re-immersed.
Yeah, we don't record these on Sundays and then put them up Monday.
This is not a live show.
I'm not even a real person.
Liam is a very poorly written AI.
Yeah, I was an anime girl for the first 4 years of my life. Like an anime pop star, and now I'm this.
I think it's better.
I disagree. I had a lot more fun as a pop star.
So before we get too into it, I know a lot of people don't know where to start, and for some of our listeners that they've been writing either on, you know, in our Patreon or to messages, that this is the first time they've ever GM'd, is trying to do this, a half-finished system that they're that they're excited about, which is very flattering, but some of the things I kind of want to bring up first is just a little bit of GM advice. One of the things, I know we've all dealt with this, Max, you've dealt with this very recently, is anxiety when you're a new GM and hoping that people will just like what you're doing.
Yeah.
You know, like that's your players especially, because 9 times out of 10, they're your friends. So how do you navigate it when you're the GM, you're the one kind of championing every part of the system to the people who want to play, usually. Like you're the one like, I want to do this. This is my wheelhouse, because if you're not invested as a GM, you know, no, it's never getting off the ground. And a lot of times, a lot of first-time GMs are people who say, I really wanted to play this game, so I had to GM it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that was that, me, for sure.
That
yeah.
definitely happens.
So how do you deal with that initial anxiety? Because you're new. You don't really know what you're doing. You know what the system is, but you're not. You haven't never played it before.
Mm-hmm. Fake it till you make it, baby.
I would say, for me, session zero is the thing that gives me more comfort, because for me, a lot of like my first original worries was like, you know, are they going to think this is fun? Are they going to think that this is funny? Am I even good at making this up? But well, wait a minute. If I just do session zero and we figure out what the basic stuff is, that's one less thing I'm going to have to make up on the spot. Mm-hmm. Like there's really, in my experience, at least I was worried about making stuff up on the spot and being underprepared. That was a big worry. And that if I'm underprepared, it'll like people be like, oh my gosh, we have to wait while he makes something up. This is boring, you know, whatever. I think players are way more forgiving than you think. And if they're not, you don't want them as friends.
Yeah.
Session zero should be helping you alleviate those worries by setting up expectations so that they don't get, you know, freaked out. And especially if they know you're a first time GM, they may know that you need to take a minute. Don't be embarrassed to take a minute. Like, just, hey, you know what? I didn't have that plan, but give me 1 minute here. Go ahead and grab a soda, grab a pee break. I don't figure this out. I think first time GMs would be surprised with how flexible other players would be, especially if they're experienced players and you're the first time GM.
Yeah. What about you, Max? What do you think? You just did it.
Yeah. Narcissism helps.
Sure.
And then it's just a game. So, you know.
Yeah.
Like, you're having fun with your friend is most likely. So just have fun.
Yeah, you can just talk about magic weed booze for like 20 minutes.
It's not like you're playing Star Wars where everyone knows the story. Like, you're making it up as you go. if you change something or forget something, the players don't know. It's not something to get caught up on.
Yeah.
Or, you know, granted, if you're running the S-Dice system, you are probably making up a story from scratch, but mm-hmm. feel free to, if you're going to do a first-time GMing thing, maybe run something out of a book.
Yeah.
To fall back on. It gives you a little bit of ammo.
I almost want to create a guide for how to convert our system. Like, if you're using a pre-made adventure for anything, we can use language like what's hard to hit, what's easy to hit.
Yeah.
You know,
or even just percentages.
Yeah.
You could figure out straight percentages based on that.
Well, for instance, if they're fighting something, let's say in D&D, and it's a fire beetle, and you know that fire beetle's AC is 20, they're level 2, you know that's going to be really hard to hit.
Yeah.
So I would just say if something's really hard, its AC or its dodge in our system is 17. That's really hard to hit.
But should this have armor?
Right. You can lower its armor, or you can lower its dodge and increase its armor, you know, and generally don't go over this amount unless it's like a boss. But that, I never had trouble converting monsters, you know, just reskinning them. So something like that might be useful for GMs if they want to do our system. What about you, Liam? What was your first GM? Do you remember? I was very nervous for mine, but do you remember yours?
No, I don't.
You don't remember the first time you GM'd a game?
Because I know the second one, because I was running an epic level 3.5 game, and I hated it. Because it was
Dungeons & Dragons
yeah.
Edition 3.5.
But there was an epic level handbook, and I bought it, and I was like, I want to try this out. But the amount of math after level 20 is dumb. Yeah, it was probably just a 3.5, like a basic 3.5 game.
But you don't remember if you were nervous or excited or sure of it or not sure of it?
By the first time I GM'd, I'd been playing for like 3 years.
Hmm.
And kind of stopped enjoying it by that point.
And you stopped enjoying playing it?
Yeah, it was too much of a thing that we were doing already to stop.
What, the campaign that you ran for Josh and I, when did you start that one? Like, do you remember?
Dude, I was out of college already, so that was only a couple, like maybe 4 years ago.
But like, do you remember?
It was longer than 4 years ago.
But it was only like five or six.
Orion is 5.
Uh-huh.
And it was a couple years before.
All right.
It was at least 2 years before that.
Well, and what was that, your third time GMing? Fourth time GMing?
No, that was like the 10th.
10th? Oh, that's shit. All right.
No, I ran a couple of Star Wars games. I did.
Oh, I remember that. Yep.
Yeah. And I'd done 3.5 games by that and done two or three fourth edition ones.
But the very first time, you just don't remember being like whatever?
No, because I think the reason why it happened is the guy who was running the other game we were playing just was like, oh, I'm going to be gone for a month. So I just ran a one-shot. Hmm. And there was no...
Just a reason to stay together.
Yeah, and there was no pressure because it was just a one-shot. And yeah, it was just like, oh, well, this is what we do Sundays, so...
And if it's the same group, too, I suppose. It wasn't a new group.
Yeah.
No, and I just got to punish Mike for being a dumb power gamer and punch him in the face.
Yeah, if it wasn't you guys, it might have been different.
Sure.
Different experience, but... I guess we're a gaming group. We're comfortable together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was always super comfortable with the people I was mm-hmm. playing with, so I was never worried. By the time I had started GMing, I was so deep into 3.5 rule headache, like garbage, that it was fine.
Mm-hmm.
And then GMing 4th edition games was a joke in comparison.
Yeah.
So like, I didn't have to worry about anything, or even inventing stuff on the fly, because most of the stuff that you read in the GM's guide for that is just like... This is how you get out of these scenarios. Or here's 1,000 ideas to just like crunch into. So it was really easy to deal with.
I really like making stuff up too.
Yeah.
So that helps.
My first time GMing was a game of Werewolf the Apocalypse, and I barely remember it. But I wasn't nervous because it was me and two people who also didn't know the system, and we were trying to figure it out as we went. So I was just making stuff up, and they would be like, would that work? I'm like, I don't know. I don't know. I wasn't nervous because we just wanted to play. But the first time I was nervous, it was when 4th edition had just come out. And I really wanted to try it. I'd never done D&D. No, I'd done 3.5 with Liam and our mutual friends. But I'd never GM'd. And there's a new edition. Let me try it. And I was nervous. I was very nervous. So I did like a couple of mock sessions instead of a session zero because I didn't really know what that was. And where I had them fight each other in like an augmented form so it would last a while so that I could learn the rules. And it worked out actually really well in a weird way. But I was very nervous because I didn't have a story. And if I had a story, I didn't think it was very good. I didn't realize that they're going to make up 80% of the story from the seeds that you kind of push in, so you don't really have to worry about that much.
Yeah, you're just the bones, dude.
Yeah. That and even really then, just like, you only need one bone. You need one seed, and then they just kind of do the rest of the work for you until you come up with another one.
Yeah, they'll just burn bridges to the ground forever.
Yeah, literally. that's what they did. But with a player that knows more than you, that's a tough one, because you do have to kind of exert your will as a GM for decision making. And if that's not the way that something works, you don't really want to tread on their expectation of what they know this game to be. So how do you deal with it if the player knows more about the rules than you do?
Prison rules, take him out back, beat him up, go back to the table. Mm.
Be like, just shut your mouth?
Yeah.
Okay, that's a good one. I like that solution.
I honestly don't know if I've ever GM'd a game where another player knew more about the system than me.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I definitely have.
Well, Liam's GM'd RPG from scratch, and yeah. I think the only person who knows more about it than him is me. And I, you know, yeah.
When I run a game, that'll be the instance of everyone else knowing more about it than me. Like, yeah. Pretty much everyone at the table will be like, "Actually, no, Doug, that's whatever." I'm like, "Oh, okay, that's great. But I remember."
I mean, as long as they're polite about it, you're like, "Yeah, it's not. That's not how ranged weapons work. Yeah. This is how they work." Like, if you're cool, if you're the other player is cool about it, and just like, "Yeah, that's really not how they generally work," you'd be like, "Okay." Like, and also,
yeah, be like, "That's my fault for not knowing, so it looks like you kill him."
Yeah, and yeah. It's definitely a situation of like, are they trying to
rules lawyer you,
or just to assert dominance, or is it a situation of like, that's not really how the rules are, and you're like, we're feeling like we're punished for it. Right. That's really the situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's one of the things where, like, whenever I create a character and I play with a GM who's like, "No, well, it doesn't work that way in our game." I'm like, "Okay, well, can I just make a completely different character then? Because I'd made it under these assumptions. Like, let's say I want to play Pathfinder. I want to play as a brawler, and I want to maximize the number of attacks I get per round. And that's my strategy. Hit as often as possible." And they're like, "Well, we use critical failure rules. So if you critically fail, you may take damage." I'm like, "Well, I'm not going to play a character with a ton of attacks then, because I might die in one round only hitting myself."
Yeah.
You know, like,
punching yourself in the face.
Right. I don't want to play that character in those rules. I'll make a different character. But if they're not amenable to that, I mean, I don't think they're probably
just choose your groups carefully. And I know
that's hard. That's
a lot of people
part.
Don't have that option. A lot of people are like, "Look, I live in a small town. There's only three people who are even slightly interested in playing this game. This is it. And if I do a bad job, or if they all turn out to be assholes, I'm shit out of luck."
And I do feel there's too much pressure on the GM to be the person who resolves all conflicts.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's not, I really don't, I think it's everybody's job in the group to take that on. You don't get this, if you're a player and you got a problem player that's ruined everybody else's time, you don't look at your GM to solve the problem. I think that's on all of you.
No, you take him up back, you kick the crap out of him, you go back to the table.
We ran into a lot of issues because in fourth edition, there's a ton of stuff we didn't know. We didn't know how grapple rules worked sometimes, and we didn't want to stop playing to check. Mm-hmm. That was generally a thing. They're like, "I think it works this way, but I'm not sure. Does everybody agree that it might work this way, and we can look it up for next time later?" And they're like, "Yeah, sure. All right, we'll play it that way, and then let's move on. Just keep going."
And then at the beginning of the next session, you'd be like, "Hey, okay, these are actually how the grapple rules work. We're going to write that down. We know it now."
It's better to do those, but like, find out what the mistakes were.
Yeah.
Present them at the beginning of the next session, so that way you're not having to constantly retcon things and argue with each other. Just agree on however you think it should work. If it's reasonable for everybody, move on. But some people just aren't into that. They need to be correct and right. And I
don't want to play with them. choose your players carefully. That's all.
But again, a lot of people just show up to a game store.
Don't have a choice. I know.
Yeah. They're playing with strangers. So how do you... You're a GM. You're playing for strangers. Doug, we've done this at conventions.
Yeah.
Never had a problem. We've been lucky enough to not have a problem.
Basically every time I've GM'd a game, like, ever, I've come away feeling lucky. like I lucked out somehow. Like,
Liam cannot say that.
Oh, I've had some garbage ass games. Here's the thing though, in the 20 something one shots and full campaigns, there's only one group that I can really think of who's just like really not having a good time. Like, not even having any fun.
I should take back a little bit. I did play one game. I did GM one game that I feel went really bad, but it was no one's fault, really. And if I had to pick, like, what I thought the big problem was, it was mismatched expectations.
Uh-huh.
And I think that did come from a session zero that I didn't do a good enough job at setting up the expectations. What I did was I hid the ball too much, and I didn't talk too much about what my expectations were as the GM and like the kind of story I want to do. You can talk about the kind of story you want to do without talking about your story at all.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I didn't do that. So that was a lesson that I definitely learned. And I don't think the players had a terrible time, but they didn't have nearly as much fun as they could have if they just knew going in. I mean, we talked about this before where it's like, you're going to be going into the desert, so don't pick a character that has an ice focus. You may not have a good time.
Yeah. Right.
I could have done something very similar to that and would have saved a lot of trouble, but I didn't.
This is a horror game.
Yeah.
Pay attention to that.
Yeah.
You can get too caught up in your story, like how clever your story is.
Yeah. Yeah.
You don't want to reveal any clues or anything, but they need information.
Yeah. Yeah.
Expectations is a good way of putting that. Because there, sometimes you play a game and you're superheroes and you're running around and you're just punching everything in the face that you find.
Yeah.
And the other one's like, no, man, you guys are secret agents or you're assassins.
Don't be seen.
You're investigators. Yeah, that's part of this.
And, I would have been like, hey, listen, this is a teamwork thing, so don't split up. Stick together. We're dealing with a kind of humor level that's like this. The tone is like this, so you wouldn't take that risk otherwise. But... Just give them as much detail without having to go over the plot. You don't have to give away who the villain is, but at least say, if this was a movie, this would be the genre.
Yeah, I was going to say, when you watch a trailer, you should be able to tell the genre movie that you're going to go see.
Yeah, yeah.
And when you're surprised, rarely is it a good thing.
Yeah, you can't do From Dusk Till Dawn as an RPG because your players will quit as soon as the vampires show up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's true.
You know.
You're like, I thought this was a Cheech Marin movie.
I thought this was a cool, like, slick Quentin Tarantino bank heist comedy, dark comedy.
Nope.
No, it's a horror thing. Well, I've been sitting here for two sessions, man. What the fuck? I didn't want to play your fucking weird vampire game. Your foot fetish vampire game.
God damn it, Doug. You put in the vampires again.
Dare you enter my magical realm?
By the way, Doug, if you do want to run a vampire game, though, I'm down.
Like what? Like World of Darkness?
Hey, you can always top me, man.
There's
a new...
Wait a minute. What did you mean by that?
Just DM me, you know? Just dominate me. Okay. Just dominate me.
But Liam, you generate power from the bottom. How is that going to work?
You can have a power top and a power bottom. That can happen.
Yeah, it's called the broken hips.
Yeah, it's called wrestling.
So, another cause for anxiety and frustration and for hurt feelings for GMs is when players completely... break an encounter.
Oh, just give up.
Oh, okay. I wasn't going that direction, but I mean, like, in the idea that, like, I've got this guy that, he's this guy, and his words can break buildings and stuff like that. And you're gonna have to find creative ways, and they just cast silence and then stab him with a knife. You know,
I have experienced that a couple of times.
Yeah,
it's ranged. My reaction has ranged from, oh my gosh, you guys are awesome.
Yeah,
like cool for doing that. You are badasses, and. Oh, I'm such a fucking idiot, but I have to give it to them because they'd like the cleverness of it was perfect.
I'll take you one step further. I've had both of those and the abject anger that this didn't go down the way I wanted to because I had expectations I wanted to be met.
Sure.
And I put a lot of work in and it just
got erased. I always try not to take it personally because it is like a game.
Sure.
But that, I could totally...
I want to talk about that though.
I can totally sympathize with the idea of, no, you don't understand. I really put the effort into this and now I'm just angry that it's kind of been spoiled. But I think at the end of the day, if I can look across the table and people are laughing or smiling, like, that's kind of what I wanted, but I can understand for sure.
Yeah. How do you, the next thing I want to talk about is as a player, as a GM, like how do you not take things that happen in the game personally? Because we're all very good at it, but this isn't our only game group. We don't meet once a month and it's the only thing we got going on. We don't look forward to it for a month. I just can't wait to get in this character's shoes again. And it's the only time I get to do something like this. And then that character just gets crippled and has mind feeble, you know.
So you mean as a player,
you roll badly and now your character's fucked and you can't do anything about it. And you're angry because, you know the GM targeted you, which is kind of what they're supposed to do. But, like, it didn't play out in your favor and it's unfair because it is unfair because it's random, you know, fairness feels unfair. But... how do you not take it personally? How do you get past that?
Doug, you've had experience with rolling very poorly.
Yeah. For me, it's the dice. Like, the dice is there not to, like, be the scapegoat, but it's like, I know every time I pick up the dice, this could go fucking awful. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, I just have that expectation of, if I'm lucky, it'll go great and I'll be awesome. But if today I'm just unlucky, in our recent game, I felt like I was really terrible a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But I never blamed the players or the game. It was just like, fuck, I'm just rolling so bad. It's just like there's always a streak of bad luck, like, sometimes, you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. I know that kind of didn't make sense.
I was watching a Matt Coville video, and he was talking about how GMs should fudge roles. I disagree with him on this,
mm-hmm.
but he had a good point. And he's like, people's expectation. I'll see them throw dice away. It's like, I wanted to roll this die, you know, and do it, and it rolled a 1, a 2, a 2, a 2, a 1, a 2. Like, I wanted something more random than that. He's like, no, that's random.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
That is
equally random each time you
yeah,
roll
yeah.
it.
Yeah, yeah, no, you getting streaks like that, that's random. That's what randomness is.
Yeah.
And you need to set your expectations for that. Like, that's appropriate. But then his response was, the GM shouldn't be tied to the die roll in the same way for the outcomes that the GM wants. And I disagree. Don't introduce a die roll if you don't want it to,
yeah,
if you're not prepared for it to go anyway.
Yeah, as soon as you roll a dice, you need to realize that there's a chance it's going to fail miserably.
Yeah.
If you don't want it to fail miserably,
it is
as a GM... Don't roll the
you can
dice.
Just say it happens.
Yeah, it's a very Jesus take the wheel moment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you always can say, this is what happens. And if you do it enough, people are like, okay.
Yeah. In Ghostbusters, when I want something, like something must happen, instead of not rolling the dice, I just roll 40 dice. Like,
yeah.
I'm like, well, there you go. It happens. And you guys are like, Jesus Christ, Doug. Like, I mean, it's kind of like, you know, like.
It seems obligatory.
Yeah. Where it's just like, all right, we get it, Doug. This has to happen. But like. I mean, even if you don't want to roll 40 dice, just say this happens, the gods of this, whatever. Like, just, I don't mm-hmm. know, man.
But that's a delicate balance, too, because that almost comes out as an endorsement to have things affect the players that they can't control, right? You say, like, this happens to you, and you're like, that removes a lot of the player's not playing the game when you're just saying this happens to your character.
It would be unfair to wield that power to single out a single character, because mm-hmm. then that character would be like, dude, that is unfair. Like, you wouldn't do that to anyone else. Why are you doing it to me?
Well, or also the whole group. You could say you get arrested. You're like, we resist. You're like, no, it works. It happens. You know, like, you're like, well, no.
I usually try to avoid that when it's the stuff that has to happen. I'm like, the moon explodes. And they're like, why? And I'm like, you don't know.
Yeah.
Doesn't...
Stuff
you're
where they
not
can still
on the
do
moon.
Stuff.
Yeah,
they
why would
react.
You?
Yeah.
I think it depends on the context, but I think when everyone sits down, GM included, you know, if you're rolling the dice, if you have a streak of bad luck, I think everybody at the table feels it, where they're like, oh man, like, sorry, it's not going that way or whatever. But I think as a player, if you're having just a really bad time, just know that failure is what makes it interesting, because if everybody used the force and rolled 20s every single time, it actually would get boring.
Yeah.
Like, oh,
the risk is the point.
Yeah.
This kind of leads to what I think is the best advice for new GMs who are anxious about what people will think, about their skill, about, you know, like their familiarity with the rules, is that the luxury we have, because we're friends, also because I've done this before now, I know it's okay to fuck up.
Yeah.
That's it. You just have to be, at a certain point, you're like, if you say, for instance, in your story, you say one thing, and then later on, you're like, yeah, and because of that, there's this, and all your players are like, that's
Wait
not what
minute.
You said.
Yeah, yeah.
No. You said this other thing. You just got to be like, oh, really? All right. Yeah, sorry, I messed up. Okay, well, anyway, it's that then. And your super fantastic boss that you did, and then they killed him in one move that you didn't predict, you just need to take that boss and go, okay, well, I'll just pocket that idea for a different context later.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, yeah.
And then
yeah.
And awesome. That was a great solution, everybody. Congratulations.
Yeah.
Like because I guarantee you, they had fun. Like, that was, if they came up with a clever solution to some world beater that you created,
yeah,
that was a really fun moment for them.
Yeah.
So don't stress about not knowing everything, and don't over prepare, because everything can change with a moment's notice.
Yeah.
And
even just a die roll, them failing, but a player saying no. Like, if they're like, I want to offer you this deal, and they offer them something, the players say no, that changes everything. Just don't over prepare. Be flexible. That's it. Make things up on the fly. And if you don't know what it is, if you don't know what's going to happen next, tell them, I didn't plan for this. I don't know what's going to happen next. Can we take a 5-minute break?
Yeah.
And I'll come up with something. They'll say yes. Like, that's all. That's they just want to play. They want to have a good time, and they kind of like it when things go a little cockeyed.
Yeah, but also as a GM, be willing to celebrate your players' successes too. Because sometimes when they beat you, it's not a lucky roll or not something you forgot about. They just all do everything right, pitch perfect, and get the criticals they need to, and they flatten something. And you're just like, well, you built a wonderful machine, my friends.
So I didn't do the homework because I was in D.C.
Okay.
Oh, I forgot we were doing that one.
I did it.
Yeah, I should have brought it up. Saviors, Liam.
Okay.
We'll save it for next time. I forgot to do it because I was very preoccupied. So that's it for GM advice today. I kind of want to look online for questions.
Do I get bonus points, though?
Yeah, I'll give you bonus points.
Yay, extra credit.
You get to start Echoes with two more momentum than
everybody. Ooh! I like that, actually.
Yeah. I would like to add one more thing about on the GM advice
sure.
thing. Just simply that I think new GMs need to remember that as much work as you're putting into putting this thing together, the like Liam was saying earlier, you're just the bones. Like, the players are going to add stuff to it, so don't feel like you... Just trust that they're there to have a good time, and if you fuck up, they're going to try to find their best way to make it fun. And I feel like I'm repeating myself, but and if they don't, fuck them, they're terrible players. Like, if they're like, you must make it fun for me, I'm here to be entertained, dance monkey, then it's like, you should just watch a movie instead. Like,
don't fuck people who don't like you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But don't feel like you're doomed because they will make something funny and go in an unexpected way.
My only experience with players I've never played with before has generally been like apprehensive optimism.
Yeah.
You know, like they don't know what's coming, but they're excited and they hope you're excited. And if you're like, this is the kind of thing I want to try, and you're not just pushing your agenda on them.
I really swear to God, the more you guys talk about this, the more it just sounds like you're picking up chicks at a bar. It's hilarious.
It's very similar. You're just like, basic new person relationship advice.
It's about expectations, and I'm like, I'm optimistic.
When I did my first convention game at that fest or whatever, as soon as they had the exposition, all right, you're off on your adventure, I'm expecting them to go to this place, immediately they took a hard left turn, not out of ignorance, but out of, oh, wait, that's where you expect us to go? We're going to impress you by going after the big bad first. I was like, oh, Jesus Christ, okay. Like, I just decided, you know what? I know they're not challenging me as a person directly. I know this is them saying, let's get into trouble in a fun way.
Yeah.
And it was amazing. So...
Worked out great.
Yeah, just don't take it personally. You were all working together to create a story. It's not your story. You have like Josh said, you have the seed, but together it's a collaborative storytelling process.
All right, you wanna do some nuts and bolts here, some world building.
I am
what you got.
Always down to build worlds. All right, good sir.
I want to make some kingdoms.
All right,
we've got the Akhenotian Empire, but that's not the same. We have a couple cultures like. For our examples, do you want to expand those, or do you want to just start from whole cloth?
Well, I think some of them are. Would there be multiple kingdoms and political allegiances in them? So, let's make the kingdoms, and then because even a kingdom might not necessarily have the same religion. Even
a city state,
Yeah, like there could be a theocracy that would probably be more than one thing, or if it's a. More traditional nation state, also probably a single religion, but a kingdom is the property of a person.
Yeah, we already talked about. I kind of want to get into some of the ones we've already established a little bit. So like the Mara, the Hrod, megalithic pseudo Egyptian, a culture. We've got a lot for them already. We've got the Pash with their lanes that you hitch a ride on the Pash, and we've got a big city that. Max invented that they left from and met in Echoes of the Star Crypt. Who runs it? How is it structured?
What's their religion? Their religion is sanctified ancestors, right?
I believe it is ancestor worship.
All right, so they would. They're
say maybe yes.
Would it be an age oligarchy?
Yeah, I was thinking like a senate made up of elders.
Yeah,
or that each clan
or high priests.
Yeah.
Well, maybe the elder would be a priest, like be the priest of your family.
Someone who seems like they're going to be ascend to godhood soon.
Yeah.
That could be cool. What was the, they had a room full of death masks in the houses of the powerful Romans. Did that room have a name?
I don't know it off the top of my head.
The gallery.
I know what the perineum is.
It's the tank.
The vomitorium. That's where they would go and throw up. The vomitoriums, where they'd throw up, because they would eat a lot,
no,
and they'd party hard, no. And they would get drunk. and then throw up in the vomitorium.
I love that they're like, what is a vomitorium? It's an exit.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the vomit exits their mouth into the vomitorium. Yeah, didn't say technically at every stadium you go to, you pass through a vomitorium.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a pretty good description, too. You ever seen people leave like a baseball game?
Yeah. Yeah. It looks like the building is spewing up.
Oh, okay. Regardless, ancestor worship, they don't do death masks. They create hieroglyphs. They create monuments.
They have like mausoleums in the underground, you know.
Yeah, maybe there's an underground. Well, huh. Would they go? Because underground, you can't see the sun.
Yeah.
And they're a sun worshiping people because they're lizard. Well, they're alligators and crocodiles.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Would they prefer to cremate then?
Maybe they're on the sun. When you die, you go to the sun, so your body doesn't need the sun anymore.
You're warm forever.
Mm-hmm. No, I think they probably, they make the megalithic structures to put them at the top to get them closer.
Like closer
sun
to the
basking,
sun?
Yeah, like basking in the sun or whatever.
All right, like I like that. Rock.
Yeah, like immure them in the structure itself.
Mummification comes from just bodies being out in the desert. Mm-hmm. They saw that and they're like, "Oh, that's cool. How do we do that?" So
that's clearly the only way to get to the afterlife.
Yeah,
is to get cooked. Be so dry that you don't decompose.
What if they just leave them out on big rocks?
Well, then other like smaller things would eat them.
It's like a Tibetan sky funeral.
Ooh, I want one, but Lauren won't do it.
She won't do it. I like you assuming you're dying first.
Hell yeah.
That is...
Like, that's the plan.
What's the sky funeral?
Tibetan sky funerals, they'll take a body up to, like, the area where there's a bunch of condors and stuff and vultures, and then they'll start cutting it up for them to eat so that they fly away.
So that the condors will fly away?
No, so their body will fly away in the bellies of condors
and
vultures.
Because I'm like, no, condors are going to stick around if you start cutting a body up.
Yeah. Maybe you would burn them in the day so the ashes would rise in the sun.
Okay.
Like if you had big like braziers and stuff, that'd be kind of cool. The brazier could be like the little hot rock, you know, that you're basking
like
in.
A heat lamp.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought are we doing kingdom though, or like more of the religion?
Well, I feel like that's we gotta think about.
If you think about what's important to them, like in a religious sense, you'd figure out like how a kingdom would be structured. Like if it's, you know, is there King Lizard, you know, or is it like, okay, this is more of like a
what would these kind of people value?
Yeah,
like what would they value in a leader?
Maybe community.
I'm saying like, age.
Yeah, because they...
Straight up age.
Size then, right? Because they're directly correlated.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So maybe the one who's basked the most is like a 400-year-old blind crocodile because he's looked at the sun too much.
Sat in the sun too long.
I don't know. Should they be 400 years old?
That's because probably he's probably insane. Like just speaks gibberish and everybody's like, oh, he's wisdom.
You sit in the sun for more than 3 hours, you're gonna.
I'm just saying, should they be allowed to live 400 years?
He's guru from Dragon Ball Abridged.
They've kept him alive. He should have died a long time ago, but they kept him alive because he'll go bask in the sun all day. Then they just moisturize him all night with shit.
I saw a Krex. It was pretty.
Kick its ass.
But that would be good because then there could be like a whole papacy around it of like interpreting what he said.
Yeah, nonsense.
They would just keep him around for that.
Well, if he's 400 years old, the version of their language might not exist anymore. Like he uses verbs they have never heard,
and he just becomes more bestial. Like because you go back into lizard brain, right? Yeah. So he's this giant, almost near immobile.
Oh, he doesn't really talk anymore.
Creature.
He just eats.
What, he's 7,000 pounds.
But what if
27 feet tall.
I almost think it would be great if it was like almost kind of like a silverback and a gorilla. Like, only one in a population of a certain size even starts doing this, and the other ones just die off.
Could be.
Now, in
like they live, like you'll live 200 years, right. Or you'll become a living god, and yeah. It's terrifying and awful, and you're insane.
But what if you're taken as a child, like a llama?
Please elaborate.
Well, like the Dalai Lama.
Okay.
I was like, what do you mean? Like, oh, the llamas, you know.
Yeah, you know, the llama.
Yeah.
Did you just watch The Emperor's New Groove?
Like a llama.
Like a llama.
Because we're talking about alligators. And you're like, yeah. Oh, well, how about a llama?
Yeah.
Like, all right, go on.
So you mean like it's a petting zoo?
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Petting zoo. But like if you were saying they would show signs from a young age that they were part of that class.
Reincarnation.
I'm saying no. Yeah. Me?
I think reincarnation would undermine the ancestor worship.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Because
you wouldn't... Because like, if you do both, you're like, oh, well, I need to ask my great-great-great uncle for help. Let me go find that baby that he was just born into. I got to go figure it out.
I do like the idea of trying to find a, like, young Harad to, like... You know, like this is sort of like a chosen one type thing, but I don't know.
I just don't think it works with the rest of everything. It's a cool idea. Yeah. We should pocket it, use it for something else.
Yeah, I think maybe it's like some great king hero now just like they just leave him outside in a garden all day and he's enormous and they feed him, but he can't really talk because he's too big.
He's like
and dumb.
He basically becomes Dionysus.
Yeah, but well, I think like just senile and immobile.
But now what's the value of having
like Pearl from Blade?
Right, but what's the value of having someone like that in charge when they have to make decisions?
Well, I don't think he's in charge.
No.
I think like that's where it starts.
He's the figurehead.
He should be the last of like a line of like god kings who actually did things and put the empire together.
Is he just a mascot at this point?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
That's what I was thinking.
Kind of like Prince Charles.
Then what function does he serve in the society other than just the mascot?
I think because he will then like be related because they do ancestor worship,
yeah.
Right? So then from there down, like who cares for him? Maybe the people who care for him, who are responsible for his well-being, are interpreting what he's saying, but it's really whatever they want to do.
It's a way of getting around hereditary rule by still having it exist. The society is held up by the idea of divine hereditary rule. This person was chosen by the ancestors to lead us. But the way you get around that is just to make sure he's a fat, bloated monster that no one can understand. You're like, then you can have real politicians around him going like, mm-hmm. This is what we have to do.
So is it more like old fat monster, whether he's senile or not, is more of like the figurehead? And if he's old and it's ancestor worship,
uh-huh.
He has the thing of like, yeah, the ancestors would probably be cool with that. Because when I was a little lizard, you know, I remember the old days. And I was like, all right, you know, Gramps, I get it. Like, this has nothing to do with this.
Well, it could be based on their values, too. So this person was a great hero and therefore can ascend, like they're
canonized or something.
Yeah. And maybe this one's is that they saw the doom and it's what made them blind.
So if you just do a great feat, you're basically like a saint. Are you like... Could there be multiples?
Well, I think so. With the ancestor worship cultures like this, you worship your own ancestors, but there's people who become aspects around a certain idea that you look to them if you need help for this certain kind of problem.
Mm-hmm.
All right, but even in their ancestor worship, I almost didn't think they were worshiping the ancestor, like their direct progeny.
Right.
It's the ancestors of the city that you live in,
like way back. Yeah.
So you definitely would worship your own ancestors, but the ones that you think of are as gods isn't your great-great-grandpa who was a dirt farmer who lived on dirt farming, who did dirt farming.
Yeah.
You're like, no, the great leader of our last kingdom who raised the city. He is the direct person we talk to about the well-being of the city.
That makes sense. And why their ancestors would be noble.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because, your great-grandpa was a dirt farmer, but mine was a warrior.
So anybody can be the big fat old crocodile who gets fed?
No.
No, I think you got to be a hero.
Yeah.
Well, anyone who becomes a hero. Like, so in other words, it's not literally a bloodline. It's not like, and you're not elected and you're like, whatever.
But the current phase or dynasty or whatever that they're based around could be related to things specific to that hero. So I almost want to go like, let's go with a big female crocodile that's been there a long time. And she saw the doom and fought back in the day, but now can't tell anybody about what happened. Mm-hmm.
Because she's too old?
No, because she doesn't remember it.
Yeah, she was blinded and turned into an idiot from it. So what's her name?
Clarissa.
She'll explain it all eventually. One day.
She had a crocodile named Elvis.
Yeah. It won't be Elvis.
Or an alligator. She had an alligator named Elvis.
Malatesh.
All right, done.
And maybe they think that she stopped the Doom from taking the Harad city.
Because their culture is older than the Doom. And yeah. So I'm the only ones that did.
She's 481 years old.
She's got the scoots to prove it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so she was like 300 fighting it?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's like 302 old leader of a tribal band, maybe.
Oh, there would be a city already.
Yeah, but like of a specific, you know, lineage mm-hmm. and stuff like that led them to do things. So maybe that's how things are organized. Like instead of being like Rome where it is, you know, you've got the plebs and the consul and the different ranks of that. Like maybe it is family-based. Like families have their own leaders. And if you want to start a war, you talk to different families.
That's because they sort have of how Rome worked, though.
Not in the same way, though. Like mm-hmm. you wouldn't go to the head of a family and be like, I need your warriors that you have specifically been training on your own with your own fighting style. And, you know, they had their own military.
This is more like everyone gets a say. In other words, like each major family will probably get a say in a city.
Mm-hmm. Which is generally true, but I almost kind of like the ideas that it's each more family codified. Each family has a specific cast, like almost like you think of like Warhammer Space Marines, like each chapter is built differently. You know, if you want to go a war, you're like, I need the Space Wolves and I need the Black Templars, mm-hmm. and that means something different. Like you're gonna put them in different spots.
Is it maybe then like if each family is like a big noble family, it's probably because of something that they're providing, whether it's like food or.
No, because everyone has to provide food. Like
true, I just mean like
in this setting, 90% of what everyone on Earth does is farming.
Sure, sure. Just the idea of like what makes their when you say okay, we got to go talk to all the head leaders, like the heads of these families before we decide if we're going to go to war as a city or not. Like what makes one family's or their vote matter more than another?
Their size.
There's just the physical size.
No, mm-hmm. also just the number in the family. I think there are subfamilies that. So, for instance, if I've got a family of 5,000, mm-hmm. there's a family of 400. That family of 400 is not trying to join my family, but they're trying to bridge alliances and stuff like that.
Breed in,
or just be contractually
taken
care of, that kind of thing. And they bring something to the table for whoever will pick them up. Like maybe they, you know, they've just got a couple people who do certain things.
So maybe they're just like they're just territorial.
Yeah.
Like a real alligator or crocodile.
Say she took all the citizens of the city into her mouth while the Doom was happening.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
She might have protected like
how they carry their little eggs, you know.
Like, yeah. Well, know. So maybe she did that with two of her offspring.
Were they heroes?
Later. Like they later were. She took the brunt of it. They survived in her mouth because she's enormous. Mm-hmm. And then they came back to warn everybody and rebuild, and that's why she's being lauded. She doesn't have a full family anymore, but her children are held in high esteem.
And like she took the hit. She's the mother of two badasses.
Yeah.
Who is a badass herself?
So she's more like the queen mother.
Yeah, but well, let's say she was a hero before this.
Sure.
And then in that, she took a sacrifice, and now they're just saying, well, we survived because she did this. Our entire culture survived.
But they're just taking care of her now.
And the values of the city are based around things that her house represented that was wiped out.
Yeah.
Like maybe her house went and faced the Doom and they all got wiped out except for her.
So this is like their way of paying respect for
that could be cool.
Yeah. Like you made sure that we all are here today. We wouldn't have been here if it wasn't for
you. And this is just the city that we came from.
Yes.
Yeah.
So maybe her family values rivers. Like that's part of their crest or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like they value like rivers and
nom noms,
chicken. But something that like if you're doing city planning, you're a city planner for one of the families and you won the contract or whatever, you'd be like, well, I'm going to install a beautiful river. It fully meets the traditions that we are using to honor her while she's still alive.
Flow right through the temple, nice little and center place there.
Great, her two children and grandchildren can put all their eggs.
Statue of each of her children on either side of the river, bridging the gap. It's going to look nice.
Mm-hmm. I almost want both of her children to be dead.
Oh, probably by now.
Well, I mean, I'd imagine she'd had like hundreds of kids,
and they're all died in the Doom.
Yeah, except
and this is the last two.
Yeah, but I thought like maybe these two that she saved aren't great heroes, but they persist in the, you know, they could be heroes. Maybe one of them is, you know.
If one of them is like an architect.
Yeah. Well, so maybe these two brought back the knowledge to keep them from suffering the doom or something like, hey, yeah, things are going bad. The Savathians got wiped out. We need to reinforce our economy and become self-sufficient right now so we don't lose everything, because it's going to, all of civilization is going to have the rug pulled out from under it. And they did enough so that now they're doing well.
So they're the Egyptians in the actual Bronze Age collapse.
Yeah.
Right, this is why we're writing our shit down in stone. You know, so if anything happens,
we gotta fit the sea people in here somehow.
No,
that's the Savathians.
Yeah.
the idea on the note of picking a child to lead or whatever, I just thought
I don't think it's always a child.
The Dalai Lama, you mean?
The Dalai Lama thing. Yeah, the Dalai Lama, the reincarnation, picking him as a child or whatever. I thought, would that work for the Krex if you were of an egg of a certain kind?
Oh,
an egg of a certain color.
A marked egg.
It's got a star on it.
Yeah, a marked egg is like, ooh, oh shit. It's like some bird, you know, out and whatever, some Krex just, oh, I laid the egg and holy shit, it bears the mark. And everyone has to come and they have to measure it, make sure it's the right thing.
Is that Elvis on it?
Yeah. that could be kind of, or if it's spotted of a certain kind, whatever it is, you know. And of course, people try to fake it. You know, they fake their egg to look a certain way, but they're like, nah, this is bullshit.
Okay, so now we've got that. Structurally, how do they work? Is there a council below?
I like the idea of direct priests who are also just old as shit.
Mm-hmm. Probably you can't be a priest unless you were a hero. And hero doesn't have to be in battle. The hero can be you saved.
You have to be lauded. In fact, you have to be lauded so much that you are outside of the clan system.
Yeah, okay. So you can
become
ascend.
You become a hero of the city or a higher mark, and you are no longer concerned with the benefit of your family. You are concerned about the benefit of the city.
Ideally.
Right. Yeah, you are allowed to exit that structure, and your responsibility, your family is now everyone.
Yeah.
And they all accept it.
And that is how you become lauded and part of the religion.
Mm-hmm.
Where if you were only a great leader of your family will worship you. If you become a great...
So this is like being a Supreme Court justice,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it is we're ascendant.
There's a fixed number of them, and a new one can't be put into it until another one dies.
Yeah.
So how many? Seven? You want to do a prime number?
Nine.
Nine's not a prime number, but I like nine.
I like nine.
Okay, so let's do something related to the sun. I mean, obviously you could say enlightened, illuminated.
Illuminats.
The Illuminats.
I like Illuminats.
That could work.
Phenomenats.
I love that band.
The Coronals. Albedo. What are solar terms?
Solaran. The Swolars. I don't know.
Swolar.
Yeah.
Glossary of photovoltaic terms. There's the absorbent. You know, somebody who takes in a lot of solar energy. Let's see.
The Bronzed.
Astrophysics and Cosmic Engine Glossary.
All right.
Cosmic Engine. That's fucking tight. Hello, Boston.
You would open for the Claypool Lennon Delirium if you were Cosmic Engine.
The Luminous?
I like that.
Well, because you wouldn't say the Luminous Nine?
Yeah.
Luminous Nine? Or just the Luminous. There are nine of them.
Yeah. Or you could even say the Nine occasionally. That, they know what you're talking about.
Yeah, talking to Nazis you've never heard of the Nine of Luminous? Center pillar of all wisdom in the rock community.
And we don't need to go into who each one is now, but if we make an adventure that deals with them, they'll have to interact. People will have to interact with individuals of the Luminous.
And how do you get to be the Luminous? You're sort of
you are a culture wide hero for some reason.
Mm.
So you may be.
But I mean, do the sort of the people demand it, or is this or does one Luminous die and they go, we got to fill this gap? Who's done something awesome?
They probably have their own private lists, and then the Luminous vote on who joins them.
Yeah, and that's part of it. But also, there has to be a public. If they're like, oh, we want this guy, this is politically viable, and the public are like, no,
yeah,
nope, not that guy. Then
maybe the Luminous and the public agree on a list.
Yeah,
and you always know who's next in line.
You would even campaign for it.
Yeah,
but not in a current presidential campaign you would literally just show up on the day where they decide and you're like, I'm good for the job. Or you could even be like, no, dude, this is not.
You could turn it down.
This is not my gig.
I just run around killing people.
In the sands, yeah.
So let's say we've got a city of 4 million people.
All right.
All right. You've got Malatesh.
Mm-hmm.
What is her title? She's at the top.
Just the basker.
The radiant.
There's sure. The luminous, and then there's the radiant.
Yeah.
A little, you know.
They bask in her glory.
Mm.
Yeah. Okay. So she's the radiant, and below her are the luminous. There's 9 of them.
Yeah.
They individually have responsibilities related to their skills, but when it comes to matters of the city as a whole, they have to all be present
mm-hmm.
to come to resolution. And then below that, like, they've got their own executives and then sublevels to that. So for the cities, let's see, the Mera, you probably deal with just small scale. Generally, like, if somebody was to, crime happens, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And a detective comes out, you know, who does a detective report to? Does it report to the chief of police? Or
no.
Do they have a police force? Or is it just the military in their investigation?
I think the military, all forceful power should come from the families. Mm. So if it's
they've
in
got
the
their own investigative,
if it's thing. in the territory that family controls, you go to the family leader and be like, "This is what happened," or someone you know, someone of a regular,
yeah, and
who's in charge,
and it's up to the people leading up to the Luminous. They get kicked to the ladder, like kind of like the Supreme Court, where there's smaller and smaller courts. But like, if they think it needs to be bigger than one family, or be discussed between unrelated families to resolve, there are people between then who will.
Yeah.
Move it around. So trade deals, crimes, things like that. There'll be...
Well, I think it would be the difference between, like, federal and state level, where block by block, it's families. Mm-hmm. And then when you're dealing with the city as the whole, you're dealing kind of more with the church politic.
Right. But the church is the military, is the... But then there's no church without the families.
Yes.
Who maintain their own portion of it. Okay.
And the militaries is still made up of soldiers of the families, but they don't organize themselves in a way that could be done to say at a federal level.
So let's look at our continental map here.
Okay? All right.
And we've got here we go. Okay, so we've got Akinosh in the middle of the countryside of Jarnesia.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I don't think that the Mera can be that far away from the water.
Yeah.
I want to make them a like at least control of a coastal region. There's a very large coastal region 2 countries away that I think that they can control the entirety of. How do you feel about that?
Yeah.
Sounds cool.
Okay. And what do we call that region?
Is that the mega city of Mera that controls the area?
Yes.
Okay.
Which is that city is a country that has mm-hmm. fingers that spread out, but not in the it's not connected by roads. It's connected by pash lanes. It's much slower speed than the Akinosh. They're not laying pavement down the way that...
Yeah.
You know, Akinosh isn't establishing, like, trade routes. They're slower-thinking people. They move on a larger, longer scale. So, what do we call the city of the Mera, of that culture?
Didn't we have a name for it already? In Echoes?
That was a city, but it's not, like, the grand...
Okay.
You know.
For a minute, it's like you were describing Jacksonville. Just, like... Ekes out,
yeah.
From the center, that's like it's so big.
It's more like Los Angeles.
Yeah.
What's her name?
Was it Jokat Royal University? Jokat wasn't the name of the city, right?
Jokat was near a city,
Nafar.
Nafar,
the city of Nafar. So Nafar, I think we put it on the opposite side. I think we go down here. Sorry.
Well, that could be another. Know. That could be another Mera. City-state.
Yeah.
Like, there can be multiple. Mm-hmm.
So let's name one country of the Mera. It will be...
the Great Nest or something.
Like Korska.
No.
Just stuff like Korska.
Yeah.
You know?
Cool.
And there may be like 3 or 4 satellite cities that are, you know, pretty big, but not millions.
Yeah. So it's... Korska is the capital seat of the Mera. And Nafar...
Of the Mera... Of all of the Mera?
Yes. Of that culture. That's the country.
Yeah.
So,
but,
for instance,
but I
would
almost
say,
think it would be more kind of like almost Grecian, where like there'd be 4 or 5 very large cities. They're all Mera. They're all culturally similar,
mm-hmm.
but they would have their own patriarch or matriarch.
Sure, and much like them, Athens is the is the cultural seat.
But it was also like Thebes was the most important city for a long time, and Sparta won the war.
Okay,
we could say each of them. Had,
think of it.
You know.
Think of it like Spain then.
Yeah.
Right. So reach out from Spain or Portugal. Mm.
Or
you
like
know?
In Japan, they were always arguing what was the capital of Japan. Like, yeah. Where yeah. We're like, well, no, this guy, this emperor, this is the real emperor. And it's like, nah, I'm pretty sure this guy's the real emperor.
So since the Doom, Korsk has been the capital of the Mara?
Yeah, well, there's another one. So the one near where Echoes took place mm-hmm. is the continent, or sorry, the countryside of, it already has a name, Lagos, mm-hmm. L-A-G-U-S, Lagos. I'm fine with that. Mm-hmm. I'm just labeling it that it's a Mara area. And then Nafar is at the corner of that. So that's a Mara-controlled area. Okay, I like that. I like how that works. We've got the Radiant, followed by the Luminous, and then it spreads down from there. But each city, and we'll have to come up with names of houses if we, you know, after the Luminous, and how they're structured, much in the way that, you know, I think Space Marine Chapters is a good way of thinking of it. You have people yeah. in every role, except for it goes all the way down to the farmers, you know,
I almost think like,
and sanitation,
pure peasants, pure serfs probably would not even be like, there's a family that you work for, but the family doesn't consider you part of it.
Hmm. I don't know. I would imagine that almost you, because they're so long lived,
mm-hmm.
like maybe you start out as a farmer in one family. In one family, you're always a farmer oh, yeah. to start.
Well, no, you could always, up, you know, you could always start up that way, but it even in that family, there'd be a, you know, a prime.
Sure.
A prime family thing, and they'd probably want to move you up. And even then, there has to the amount of dispossessed people has to be unreasonably larger than the amount of people who get to climb.
Mm-hmm. And that like, could be handled just through the amount of...
Like, maybe actually in the city, you could have, you know, most of the people be something other than farmer. But in the wilds, you just have farmers that you yep. take taxes from.
Question, though. When the Radiant finally dies...
Mm-hmm.
How is a new Radiant chosen?
Probably one of the Luminous.
I'm going to say no. It can't be one of the Luminous.
It has to be. It has to be somebody else. Exceptional.
Like, yeah. Luminous probably get to have the final vote, but does the public vote somebody?
Yeah. And also, the whole thing is something unreasonable has just every time it's happened to happen, needs to happen, something big happens and someone shows up and is obviously that person. Like, Napoleon just shows up on a fucking horse.
Or maybe... Somebody doesn't have to replace the Radiant.
Yeah, you can have.
Maybe it's
you
can just
go without until someone worthy shows up.
Yeah, maybe that's what happened with her is that they're maybe they went 50 years without a Radiant and then she did that and they saved the city, so they raised yeah. her up.
You have to do something really good in order.
Once in a generation; it's once in three.
Yeah,
and maybe the public, maybe the Luminous cannot choose. Maybe yeah. it's only the public can choose.
Yeah,
yeah, I like that.
If the public demand is high enough; you just can't even ignore it.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe because if it's like if the public is like, if you don't make them the Radiant, we're gonna take care of them. It's like it's almost like an arms race. Like,
if we all agree
that we should take care of this person,
yeah, you just have no power anymore.
Yeah,
like we'll mm-hmm. just unseat
yeah.
you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, I like that. I like where that's gone. I think that's all we got time for today. I'm good. I'm happy. I'm happy with that. The Mara. So we can now deal with them as an actual cohesive player in this game in the Game of Thrones that we're making.
Well, they would find the idea that there's like trouble in the Akenoshian Empire because Akenosh is how old?
150.
Yeah,
yeah.
They would be like, whatever.
Yeah.
It's within the lifetime of some of the people who are in charge.
Yeah, mm-hmm. they'd find it. Oh, juvenile growing pains. You mm-hmm. know, like that kind of thing. Much like British found America.
But I almost think the Mara wouldn't be that particularly expansionist either.
No,
that's not their goal.
They seem pretty solid. Like,
but that's how they survived the Doom. Even they yeah. weren't expansionist. They became self sufficient.
Yeah.
Well, let's say
contained.
They are expansionist. They're just a much slower pace than everybody else.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, because they got nothing but time.
Yeah. They'll outlast you.
It's like the desert.
For the Savathians.
Yeah. That's why they're just like, God damn Savathians.
Yeah, how long can Hrod live?
400 years. 408 years.
Maybe, okay, for the average, let's just say for the average day labor, just like working Joe.
200?
200 is pretty high up.
200?
200 is pretty high up. And if you do something totally awesome, and then literally you live a life of leisure, well, and they're taking care of you.
But it should always be the system where, like, if you, in the realm of the game world, get momentum.
Yeah.
You are longer lived by sure. de facto. Like, yeah.
So
you are functionally magic.
So if you're like 200 is like, you're old. Yeah, that makes sense.
You worked on a farm.
Yeah. And but maybe.
Go croak.
For like a Radiant, 300 is like, oh, yeah, they're pretty fucking old. And if you get to like 400, they're like, damn, is this bitch ever going to die?
Yeah.
Like, but in a way that's like not completely unheard of. It's not magic.
I almost think like a Radiant going to 5 hundo. That's happened before. That's a thing that happens.
Yeah.
But in like a regular hero, even 350 is like, oh, that happens.
Yeah.
So
you get to 500, you got some fucking momentum.
Yeah.
Like you've done something.
So it is a myth that crocodiles are immortal.
Yeah, they aren't.
Yeah, but let's just say fuck that. Let's just make it so that like life is just harder as you get bigger.
Absolutely. Well,
I want a hard limit on it because we already have an immortal race.
Yeah. It's I mean, if you just imagine like. The larger you get, like she's immobile and blind, you know, like it, however, you know,
smells probably going too, like the scent, you know,
she can't recognize anybody, doesn't react. They're just kind of keeping her in the garden, you know?
Yeah. We just kind of mush up the food and feed it to her. It's kind of,
yeah. So, okay. All right. I like this very much. I think that's a good intro to a kingdom that we can have in our back pocket. Mm. Maybe we'll do another one next time.
Again, I call the Gulf City States. They're mine. I want them.
They're ours. We do them together, just like we did this.
You can have eight.
Okay, so thank you, everybody, for checking out this one. We've still got so much more to get into and so much more to build for the world and the game. And we really value your input. If you come up with a cool idea, share it with us on our Patreon. We'll talk about it. We're really into it. Also, if you have questions about GMing or anything like that, we may not know the answer, but we'll talk about it. I've GM'd a lot. Liam's GM'd a lot. Doug now has GM'd a lot. And now Max is getting a decent taste of what it's like to not only GM, but do it while being recorded and having to be accountable for what he said.
Yeah, at a high level. Yeah. High level GMing.
Write in. Ask us stuff. We're happy to talk about it. And as always, check us out on our Patreon. We got tons of stuff for you there. We're always coming out with new things, including our Cutting Room Floor, which I think is practically its own podcast at this point.
The last one I listened to, I had such a fun time just listening to it. Being like, Cap is so funny.
Yeah. As always, you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/RPGFS.
You can find us on twitter.com/homebrewhombres.
You can find us on Instagram at RPGFromScratch, but it's all one word.
Thank you, everybody, for listening. And until next time, stay safe, stand watch, and get a full rest.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.